It's Monday, November 13th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 27 of Fear the Booth, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 7 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Booth. My name is Dan, and on the mics with me today I have Chad.
Howdy.
And Adam.
Hi.
Now, we also have someone else sitting in with us, and we decided that for this episode, we wanted to do sort of a cross-podcast episode and have a guest host sit in with us from another podcast.
Run for your lives!
And
For
those of you that have been following us...
I am the monkey staff.
For those of you that have been following us for a little while, you know we were at Archon back in October, and while we were there, we had the privilege of doing some panels with two other podcasts. One of them was a podcast called Fanboy Smackdown, which you can find
Fanboy
at...
Fanboy Smackdown Radio.
Okay.
No, it's not.
No, it's just FanboySmackdown.com.
Just thinking Bad Buddha Radio. Oh, yeah.
Right.
The other one.
And you can find his website at FanboySmackdown.com. His name is Tony. Tony is quite the expert on movies. Tony, say hi. Tell us a little something about your podcast.
Well, we do movie analysis, critique, review. We drink a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
nice.
That covers it.
Welcome to our bonus episodes.
For this,
yes, every one of our episodes is one of your bonus episodes.
For this episode, we, bringing Tony in, decided to do a topic that hits directly between our two podcasts, and so we are talking about RPGs and movies and how those two things figure together. Primarily, we are going to look at the only really two major RPG movies out there, which is the two Dungeons & Dragons movies. Now, some of you may say, you know, what about Mazes and Monsters? We are putting that under a different topic for a future discussion on role-playing prejudice. So we are talking about the two D&D movies. Now, before we dig into that, a couple points of Fear the Boot business to knock down real quick. First of all, we have two contests running on our website. One of them is an art contest for pictures of Baron Von Badass.
The good Baron.
The good Baron. If you go to our forums at feartheboot.com, look in the contests category, and you will find the rules in there. There's quite a few of them, so I won't read them all off here. The important thing you need to know is these entries have to be posted on our website or emailed to one of us by noon on Saturday, November 18th, and that's noon Central Time. The second is a poetry contest that I believe submissions have to be in by, Adam, this is what, the 25th of November, right? Saturday,
yes.
25th, noon, same time?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to tell us a little about your contest?
No.
No? Brilliant.
Hey, Chad hijacked my contest. Have him tell you about
it. All right, Chad, you hijacked the contest.
I just maneuvered it around. I actually didn't read any of the rules. So
you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Okay, this is the game plan. We're going to have a poetry contest. The submissions are going to come directly to me. This is going to be an anonymous poetry contest. I am going to...
Email them to adam@feartheboot.com.
Yes. Or private message me on the forum with Adam.
Yeah, his name's Adam on the forums.
What is going to happen is I will post a new thread that only I can post in that is every single poem. And then we will have another thread where you vote for the poems. And the only person who's going to know which poem is me, well, I mean, other than the authors themselves,
right,
is me. And I won't vote.
And the winner, we are going to give a $30 Geek Label coupon to, just to give you some kind of incentive dinner. So get out there and stretch your poetry legs with us.
If you win or decide to try to win that coupon, you might want to hold on to it for a little bit, because Geek Label is going to be doing our Fear the Boot t-shirts, and more on that when that gets all arranged.
To wrap up one other issue of business before we dig into today's topic, we just finished a series two episodes ago on bad game mastering and bad playing habits, and one of the bad playing habits we talked about is the people that are easily distracted during the downtime. Let's say they're in a group and it's just not their turn, or they're not with the rest of the party when something happens, and so they get fidgety and start doing distracting things. Or Chad, what are some of the things that you tend to do?
I have laser focus on whatever the GM is saying.
Actually, you're not my only or even really my worst offender on this one. I have someone who's worse, but he's not here. So Jim offered some really good advice, really simple advice. I don't know why we did not bring this up. I say Jim, I'm talking about the infamous Jim in Buffalo, that if you listen to any podcast on the face of the earth, you have heard his name. His audios are played in places like not just other gaming podcasts, but NPR, the BBC. Jim has contacted them all. And Jim was suggesting that during this downtime, you've got a great opportunity to do something productive. rather than even just finding something quiet and non-distracting to do, why not read up on the rule book and get used to your character's abilities, or, you know, figure out his spells? Or if you don't play a real rules intensive game or a rules intensive character concept, then develop his personality and background. Sit there and work on some of the NPCs in his past, or flesh out a little more information about him. This would be a great time to reinvest back into the game and to keep perfecting your character. I guess, you know, I'm not typically a fan of major edits on a character mid-game, but I really guess fleshing out a character is not the same as editing the character.
You can write stuff about his extended family, or you could say that Baron Von Badass killed his family and because he was angry. Well, then you could write a whole story about that scene of what happened with the good Baron and that sort of thing.
Right.
The Baron as he slaughters his family.
Well, I'm not saying anything bad about the Baron. He'll kick my butt.
All right, so let's dive into what we're actually here to talk about, which is movies and role-playing games.
Oh, my.
Before coming down here to prove our mental fortitude.
Manliness.
I am less of a man after this.
We sat through both D&D movies.
Yes, we did.
So before we dig into any of these tertiary topics, like why there aren't that many RPG movies, let's start with a real detailed review of the movies. And here I'm going to call upon, of course, the opinions of my usual suspects like Chad and Adam, but also Tony, your expertise in the movie area to give us a look at some of the things that we just may not think about. So let's start with the first of the two D&D movies, the one that was released in 2000, theater released.
It's a steaming pile.
It is a complete steaming pile.
Yes. No.
Yes. Everything from the acting to the dialogue.
Direction, lack of direction.
Plot. The plot was just dreadful.
Yes. Lack of overall design or style to the movie. It's just they set up a camera, go to some location, and have people walking around in hoodies and other anachronist type clothing.
Let's do it this way. Let's start with a simple look at how we saw the movie, and then I want to talk about those issues in detail. So, letter grade, like you're in school again, what would you have given this movie, Chad?
What's the lowest possible grade?
F.
Z minus.
You ever been to school before?
Double Z minus. It was really bad. Actually, I cannot give this thing an F minus. I cannot give it the lowest possible score. I would have to say I would give it a F to an F plus.
And there are no pluses and minuses on Fs.
The only reason...
Your choices are F or D minus.
Okay, D
minus.
That
sounds like the voice of experience.
Real briefly, why D minus? Why not?
The Wayne's brother guy, which one was it?
I think it was Marlon.
Marlon Wayne's. He actually had a few lines in it. We were sitting there while we were cracking up, and we were just like making fun of the movie. And then he would go on this thing of doing all these jokes. And then all of us would stop and laugh at the jokes because the jokes were really funny.
Okay, so you give a D minus for Adam.
But that was only like 30 seconds of the movie.
Adam?
Yeah. I'm going to give it a solid D. It was entertaining with five other people in the room doing a Mystery Science Theater 3000 on it.
Tony?
The movie itself, I'm going to give an F. Watching it in this company, B. You know, I mean, that's the experience of watching it in this company made the hour and 45 minutes enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't a complete lack. If I was watching that by myself, I would have stabbed myself in the eyes with a broken beer bottle that I busted over my own head.
I'm going to have to completely agree with Tony. I had a blast watching it just because we had so much fun, just sideshow fun while we were watching it. But this was, quite frankly, probably the single worst movie I have ever seen in my life.
I've seen worse.
I
barely, but I have seen worse.
I have seen worse as well. It's...
Man, all right.
Just can't finish.
I'm at a loss for words. All right, so let's dig through the particular issues of the movie. Tony, grab an aspect of the movie. Plot, character, where do you want to start?
You know what? I'm going to start with special effects.
All right, go special effects.
Because they did have a budget on special effects. There was a lot of dragons, a lot of rotating around spires to get to the point
rotate down.
The transitions where they rotated through the spires was really distracting because they did it every time.
Yeah.
If it was once or twice, I could have
stomached
it a little more.
There was like no fade, no wipes, no cuts. It was just, this transition bookend of the swirling tower scenes.
They made the mistake using the special effects that they had. They made the mistake of getting too close to them. Mm-hmm. The dragons got too close to the screen. They became too obvious that they were fake. When they were in the distance, when they were flying around in the background, they looked kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got too close, they just, it just sucked.
Yeah.
It was really obviously effect work.
You know, they did that too with the blood, the dragon blood hit the lake, and then the whole lake turned on fire. And at first, whoosh, the water's on fire, and then they cut away. And so you don't necessarily think that's cool, but you accept it. Then the camera pans around, and it's the two main characters talking, and the backdrop is this bad special effect, and you get to sit there for a minute and a half studying how bad this fire on water effect is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not even like they sprayed gasoline on some water and lit it up. That would have been better.
The coloring on the makeup was also horrible.
Oh,
you'd have people walking around in this ridiculously bright blue and green makeup. Even if you can accept that there were people with blue and green skin, this is not a natural look for that.
And it's like tempera paint they were using.
Fair warning to the listeners here, we haven't thrown out any big ones yet. We are probably going to drop some pretty big spoilers. No, we are not ruining anything you care about.
No.
If you have not seen this movie, don't. All right? It's plain
and
simple.
The movie comes pre-spoiled.
But we are going... we are going to ruin the plot surprises, quote unquote.
Of this one and the second one.
Now, special effects wise, two things. First of all, I agree with you guys. A lot of special effects were very poorly done. Mm-hmm. Pure armchair quarterback here. If I was to make a movie like this and I did not have a huge special effects budget, I would write the plot to be relatively low special effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making the few I had really outstandingly good. The second thing is a lot of special effects just seem pointless. We talked about the rotating up and down the tower for no particular reason. The guy that had the mind worm coming out of his ears.
Oh,
I mean, the fact that the whole movie, he had blue lips and red ears.
He had blue lips for the special effects, no reason.
When they're in the elven forest and the elvens give a magical sword, there are these two things that we cannot identify. It's just these things.
We had to stop the movie.
Yeah, we paused the movie to look at it. I'm like, what the hell? It's just like these two guys with like half skulls attached to their heads by rubber bands you could plainly see.
Yeah, you could see the... Oh, it was just terrible.
And they had funky faces that looked like they had dead ferrets on their heads. We have no idea what they were. These special effects were all pointless. They
looked
just
like some undead, troglodytic, half-elf, half-wood-beast gnome things. But in the context of the scene, they were in this elven tree village. Oh, original concept there, right. A tree village full of elves. And it's just like, what are these? Where did they come from? Why are they here? But wait, I don't care because they're so awful. Just get them off the screen.
It's almost like post-production editing where someone said, you know, we don't have enough special effects shots. Stick more in.
Yeah.
No purpose in the plot. No sense.
Special effects sell movies.
Yeah,
not this one.
Yeah.
Another problem I have with special effects is that they use the clone button. Like they made a CGI dragon to fly around, and then they just click clone, 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 and then they had 30 identical flying dragons flying around.
Yeah, they all look.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk acting.
Oh, let's not.
Wow.
Jeremy Irons, what are you doing?
Did you see those eyebrows?
Oh,
so pointed.
The forehead.
He should have just walked on stage and just held a fork in one hand and a knife in the other, because he was just chewing the scenery through the whole movie.
Yes, he was.
And I mean, chewing it the way a four-year-old chews bubble gum. Wide open mouth, just chomping on it.
Sir, what would you like for dinner? I want steak!
You know what really surprised me was when I first...
Something surprised you?
When I first heard that they were making a D&D movie, before I knew anything about it, had any idea whether it was going to be good or bad.
No,
because I think... We'll get to this in a little bit, but I think you could make a great D&D movie. I mean, honestly, you can make good fantasy movies. And
technically, you could say any fantasy movie made is a good D&D movie.
But we'll get to that. But what really surprised me when I heard about it was the fact that they were going to have Marlon Wayans playing one of the parts. Mm-hmm. And the first thought in my mind was, man, he's not a real, at the time, he was not a real big dramatic actor. He's going to ruin this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad, I completely agree with you that the only person in the entire movie that did palatable acting and had palatable lines was him.
Yeah.
Which, and that really surprised me.
It was him running his comedy routine. And he's a pretty funny guy.
Yeah, some of it was dumb, but especially near the beginning, he had some genuinely funny lines.
Right. And some of it was in the theme of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
The line about getting beaten by the halflings below the waist was brilliant.
Yeah, it was great. But that was the only great thing. That was nothing else.
After that, everything fell short. When they climbed that big tower, he's like, you know what, while we're up here, we might as well rob God.
See, that was a good line.
That was a great line. That was hilarious.
And you have to wonder, was that in the script or was that just impromptu? Was that just him?
I have to believe he made it up.
Yeah.
The rest of the writing for the whole thing was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awful.
Why was he wearing a hoodie?
You know what I think it was? I think he came on set and he's like, guys,
just on his street
we got
clothes.
5 hours to do this and I'm not taking on, I'm not changing into anything because as soon as we're done, I'm out.
Yeah.
Because he had that headband on, but when he turned around, the jacket he was wearing was just like a
normal gray hoodie.
Like a wool hoodie.
Like he had a sort of a jerkin over it. I fully expected that if he took off the jerkin, it would say like Brooklyn or something across the
Pistons.
Yeah. The costumes, that's another thing that got
me.
Those
things were hideous.
Okay, there were several costumes that were real bad. Like the main female lead, she wore this sort of velvet shirt with buttons on it. Didn't look medieval in any way. In fact, it looked like she got it from the Gap. I swear that was her shirt.
No. All right, here we go. Let's move right on into this next topic.
Well, we're talking about costumes.
Yeah.
I also.
Why does the breastplate armor for women always have to have anatomically correct breasts and nipples?
What about the belly button?
Yeah, the belly button.
Yeah, why does armor have to have a belly button?
Did she just lay down and they poured liquid metal on her chest?
Yeah, the black elf chick had the breastplate she was wearing. I mean, had anatomically precise breastplate.
We have a new term for her.
Yeah, blelf.
Blelf.
Yes.
But she was wearing this armor. Yeah, I mean, it had fully formed breasts with nipples, a belly button, abdominal musculature. I mean, it was like someone had just poured a cast of her naked torso and then made it into metal armor.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no reason. Right. You can't even describe it.
Set design. We're talking
Wait. One more thing on costumes. The princess at the end in her gold armor, where they ran out of budget, they got it from they started her head, had this gold chainmail coif that looked, pretty well done. And then they were kind of going into this scale mail that, again, was, not the greatest looking, but there was effort put into
shiny.
It. Yeah, it was shiny. And then it stopped right at her midriff. And I don't mean in like a sexy fantasy revealing way, like the costume stopped. Like, they only planned on doing torso-up shots, and they ran out of budget, and they just couldn't complete the costume.
Yeah.
But they didn't do torso-up shots. They did full shots of this half costume. It's awful.
Just because you're pointing that actress out, Thora Birch, probably the only two actors, and there's probably three actors that you can recognize out of the movie, Jeremy Irons, Thora Birch, and Marlon Wayans.
And Tom Baker.
And Tom Baker.
The guy from Rocky Horror Picture Show. What's his name?
But that's not as recognizable. No. He's not as mainstream.
No,
and
he's not.
Nor is Tom Baker.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But you had Jeremy Irons playing the role so over the top.
Oh,
and
ridiculous.
Thora Birch was like wood.
Yeah.
It was. She had absolutely no emotion through this movie.
It's the fish stick syndrome. Okay, you burn the outside, but the inside is still frozen.
So yeah.
Jeremy Irons is just trying to bring the average up.
Yes.
Awfulness. Just awfulness.
Set design, I thought, was ridiculously overplayed. Mm-hmm. There was no subtlety to it. There was no nuance to it. The main city is a city built out of this crumbling stone raised on mesas way up into the sky for no particular reason, even though there's solid ground all around it they could have built on with giant bridges coming. I mean, everything... spires that stretch like needles up into the sky, penetrating the clouds, and everything was like that.
Yeah.
It's not like throughout the whole movie you see basic villages and towns, and then there's this one city, and you're like, wow, this must be a special place. Everything was like that.
Yeah. Well, and then even when you get onto a micro level of the design of the movie, too, everything was designed to look old, but everything was all mismatched. You know, they had this sort of Renaissance-esque Senate chamber. And then the main bad guys was this sort of Louis XIV French Revival thing in his bedroom. And then, You know, then you had the outside dirt medieval peasant town where everything's made of wood and sticks and falling apart.
Let's talk about the second movie.
We got a little more to do in the first one.
Well, actually, we haven't plot yet.
Well, actually, I want to bring up racism in the first movie.
Anger.
Racism that isn't even on an actual race. They had this dwarf character in there, and they played up every single dwarf stereotype to the point of offense.
What we have talked about with role-playing games, the bad just trait of some people who will use anything as an excuse to not write a character, mm-hmm. that instead of writing a character, they'll give their person a disability that becomes the driving force of the character. They'll create a freak show character. I'm the Dragon Knight, and that is his character. And this really struck me as the exact same kind of bad writing, except it was a character for a movie instead of a role-playing game.
It wasn't they just so grabbed... so the poor dwarf who's a mercenary in this. No, it's Fytor, the dwarf. That is the length and breadth
of his character.
They tripped
over him, and then he became part of the party.
Yeah.
That was great.
And he has a beard, and he frosts upon his beard, and he's afraid of horses, and he hates elves, and...
It was,
and there was nothing more. It's not like these were his traits, but he had a character beneath that. No, I mean, this was all he was.
It was so heavy with this dwarf thing. It was like watching some old 1920s movie where they have a black guy who's isn't even black. He's like a black-faced white guy who's playing this Uncle Tom mammy role where it's just so offensive. And I'm sitting there watching this, and it's like, you know, I feel myself getting offended watching this dwarf thing, except dwarves aren't real. They're just playing up this stereotype thing.
You know, we're speaking about politics.
What?
The politics of dwarves. I absolutely hate it when movies anachronistically
This one did it bad.
Modern or postmodern political dogma. Mm-hmm. For no particular reason than just to create it as a forced object lesson of the movie, where you have in this medieval setting this empress over an empire, I mean, mind you, a complete totalitarian despot, who's just wandering around bitching and whining about equality and equal rights and all these, there should be no class differences between us. And in this case, the class, as ridiculous as it was a character class. There's no difference between
mages and peasants. And where the class difference and character class difference.
And it wasn't just like, oh, this is in there, this is a pop-up. I mean, no, they just whined on and on and on about it.
Star Wars ripoffs.
Oh, yes. Star Wars ripoffs. Well, let's start naming them. You had the people that lived up in the trees.
It wasn't just Star Wars, though. It was Lucas.
It was Lucas Films in general.
He grabbed the gem off of the mount, just like Indiana Jones at the start of the first movie.
They slid into the trash.
Yep.
There was the lightsaber duel at the end.
Yeah, at the end they had a blue magic sword and a red magic sword. Yeah,
they had
this
sort of Obi-Wan Kenobi kill my friend thing, and then the stormtroopers show up and cut everybody off.
The relationship of Jeremy Irons and, I'm blanking on the other guy's name.
Dramador?
Yeah, whatever the...
Yeah.
His flunky. I mean, that was Emperor Vader, and even the, even the scenes, the way they shot them... The way the
blue guy was Vader,
they would spin around and whip the cape around and march off between the guards. It was, they were swiped straight from Star Wars.
Yeah, it was blatant. You know, and the strange thing is the first time I saw this movie, never noticed that.
You have the scene where the girl is crawling across the floor trying to get the map during the fight, which goes back to
the bar room with all the weird people in it.
Which goes to Temple of Doom, where Indy's trying to get the antidote that everyone's kicking around.
Mm-hmm.
Plot, horrible. It was senseless.
It was weak.
And you wanted to move on to the next movie.
It was so weak.
I know. This was a defense mechanism, I think. My brain is blocking out the badness.
We tried to move past this really quickly.
It was just pointless. It was just...
It was just bad.
Yeah, I mean, it was full of holes. It was pointless. It was meandering.
Holes? There was no structure to punch holes through. It was just this amorphous blob.
Yeah.
There was no way you could have holes because there was nothing solid there to begin with.
You have the good queen who wants everyone to be equal, and the duly ruling council won't go along with it, so she levels the city.
Yeah,
and
she calls down the dragon to kill the council, and who's not going her way.
The bad guy's going to bring out his dragons to stop her dragons from leveling the city, yet he's somehow evil for this and laughing maniacally the whole time he's saving the city.
Yeah. I didn't quite get that. And then they bring in this other staff that summons all these red dragons, or, well, that he had summoned all these red, they took it away from him, then they smashed it, now the red dragons are going crazy and doing whatever.
Yeah, which was like...
But the movie doesn't deal with
this
that.
This is how they're going to save Earth. Yeah, they destroy the control device for the Red Dragon, so they're rampaging. But somehow this is an improvement of the situation.
Yeah, the Red Dragons just kind of disappear. Where were all... I mean, we're talking hundreds of dragons. Where were all of these gigantic dragons? Where were they hanging out at? What were they eating?
They were hanging out in the dungeons.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They were eating hapless adventurers.
That's right.
All right. Ones and twos taste the best.
for the sake of time, we're going to have to move on to the second movie. The second movie, I would not go so far as to call this like a wonderful or good movie, but I thought it was significantly better than the
first. In comparison, this movie was solid gold.
Now, we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons to the...
Wrath of the Dragon God or something like that.
Yeah.
We're talking about the second one made in 2005. I do not believe ever went to theaters. It was a direct-to-DVD release.
No.
It was a Sci-Fi Channel release. And then from there, I went to DVD. Going by the letter grade system again, this one I would give a C-.
Oh, come on!
I would probably give it a C-plus to a B-. And only because... Not because it was the greatest movie of all time, but because... It tried to be a good direct-to-video B-movie.
Yeah.
And it succeeded at being a direct-to-video
The reason
B-movie.
I wouldn't give it a higher grade is because, I agree with you, it was a pretty decent B-movie. And by B, we're talking about the category of movie, not the letter grade here.
Right.
It was a good B-movie. The reason that I put it a C- instead of higher was because there were a few points where... Yeah, they had some really good dialogue, some pretty good plot points, some pretty good stuff going on, but then it would just descend into the silly camp.
Yeah.
This is the type of movie that I think if it had better editing, it had someone just
tighten it up
a little. Yeah, just tightening it up. This actually could have been a really outstanding movie if someone had just been in there to clean up some of these messes in the plots and characters.
I think it had exposition problems. I think that it tried to jump in to the plot.
Oh, it did.
Points that...
I've always been told that in writing, you're supposed to show someone facts, don't tell them facts.
Right.
And this movie had a terrible habit of just telling facts.
It got out the spoon and fed you.
We're getting in too deep, though. Chad, letter grade, you said you give it a...
I think that I would... You know, thinking about it, I would give it a C. I'd give it a C+.
C plus. Okay. Adam?
B.
Monkey staff.
Is this just because of the monkey staff?
We will, in time, get to the monkey staff.
Okay.
Tony, what do
Tony?
You...
I'm going to say a B. I'm going to justify that with the fact that it knew exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It didn't pretend to be a whole lot more than it was. I understood that it was a made-for-television movie.
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot of the earmarks of a made-for-television movie in that it had some artificial points of climax when it really didn't need it.
For
didn't
like
need
commercial
them.
Breaks.
For commercial breaks, it had artificial points of exposition because it needed them for commercial breaks, people turning on the show in a half an hour. It had filler. There were big points of filler that if they were going to re-edit it for a DVD release, what they should have done is they should have re-edited it for a DVD release, cut out some of the filler. The movie was an hour and 44 minutes. I mean, it was timed out to be a television.
Right.
And I mean, you can watch it and see where some of the breaks were.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was what brought it down to that. I can't compare it to a theatrical release because it wasn't.
Right.
If I were saying it was a theatrical release, it would have to be a C.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a television movie. And television movies, I just don't have as high of expectation of.
Yeah.
You know, I guess put that way, if we were going to grade it within context of what it was, I would probably come up on the grade as well. When I gave it a C-, that was really just in comparison to movies in general, not specifically to the television movies that, you know, it would be going up against.
Mm-hmm. And if you weren't considering Monkey Staff.
And the fact that we watched these two movies back-to-back, this movie hit
solid
the home
gold.
Run. It was...
Yeah.
It was
Yeah,
it did. It watched the first movie and made notes of what went wrong and tried to avoid it as much as it could.
It even corrected a couple of mistakes, like the blue-lipped character that was
They
so
got
awful.
Rid of his blue lips.
Yeah, they brought him back and no blue lips, and he was actually a decent bad guy.
Yeah, he really was. Not all that deep, but he was a sufficient bad guy. Chad, I'm going to let you to pick which aspect of the movie do you want to start the review on? Characters, setting, plot,
characters,
acting.
Just avoid the monkey staff.
Yeah.
What's that for?
I want to do a compare and contrast to the first movie.
Of what in particular?
Of just different aspects that were in it.
Too broad. Pick something in particular.
Well, fine. Why don't you pick something in particular?
Don't pick characters.
Flushed my idea. I think the costumes. Costumes took a huge step
up. Yes, costumes. Yeah. They were much more subtle.
Anatomically correct plate.
Well, they had, like, armor. They had soldiers, and all the soldiers had the same kind of armor.
Yeah, and
they marched in formation.
The things looked kind of Renaissance-ish. They didn't look like they picked them up from the Gap or a FUBU store or whatever.
You know, I got the impression that in the first movie that there were, like, tons and tons of extras kind of mobbing around with no direction. In this one, I got the impression that there were fewer extras, but all the extras were used to a purpose. They were guards. They were peasants. The peasants were told what to do and where to go. They were wizards told to stand here and do this.
You know, I noticed actually pretty quickly in the film, even in that first scene where the guy's sitting there in his office or whatever it is, the library or record room, looking out on the people that were gathered up and dueling out there. I even then I saw that there was there was an order to it.
Right. Competent direction. Wow. Makes a difference.
And the look of it, even at that point too, you had a lord. He's a lord. I mean, you never really get a sense of what he's the lord of, but he's a lord.
Right.
And he's in a pretty plain office at ground level. I mean, he wasn't in this opulent castle with fountains and tapestry.
20 stories up in this spiral tower.
Yes. Setting design, I thought, was 100 times better done. There was a lot more subtlety to it. The medieval town looked like a medieval town. The city that in the previous movie had been built on this ridiculous crumbling mesa that stretched up towards the heavens
was
now sitting on
a castle on a hill in
flat
a forest.
Flat ground.
Yeah, very believable. I can identify with a castle on a hill in a forest. I can't identify with multiple castle towns 150 feet from each other, 3 miles up in the air.
Especially not as like, that's what everything looks like.
Yeah.
The neighborhood drugstore looks like this.
Yeah.
Acting, I thought...
Much better.
Better.
Yeah.
Lots better.
More consistent.
Yeah. And you know what?
I wouldn't even say... I would say more consistent.
Yeah. Yeah.
More average. Which really goes a long way.
The characters, the actors played their characters pretty stereotypically. You know, it's like you had the barbarian hard ass.
Well, I mean, let's call this movie for what it was. This, unlike the previous movie, this one really was almost a transposition of a generic adventure module.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you had your party, you had a very, very straightforward plot.
Well, I think
there's a bad guy about to summon this monster and we have to stop him in time and there's this ancient magic that can save us.
I think you hit it on the head right there. The first movie did not feel like D&D. It felt like generic, bad fantasy.
Right.
The second movie, I felt like I was watching a D&D movie. Whether it was good D&D or bad
D&D, better or for worse,
but I feel like I was watching a good D&D or a D&D movie.
If there was a group of players who ran a pretty solid game and you were to transpose it directly into a movie script, this is what it looked like.
Yeah. Your sort of typical D&D game. You know, they had a dungeon crawl. They had traps. They had a couple of fights.
I like the fact the characters at least had some kind of nuance and human weakness.
Each of the characters had weaknesses.
Yeah, the main character who was washed up and kind of a leftover. And
one of the great character moments in the movie was when the rogue laughs.
Yes.
When the bird gets fried.
This elf chick is like, they're faced with a trap and they don't know what to do. And this chick is like, takes out this statuette of a bird and she's like, "This bird has been with me since I was a child. It is my friend. It will guide our way." And she lets it loose into this room, and the trap kills it. It turns into a real bird, and the trap kills
it. Pretty quickly. I mean, it's like, it's
blam,
dead.
And she is standing there, mouth open, eyes wide, and then the rogue is standing there. And she turns around, looks at him, and she's like, ah.
That was hilarious.
It was a great character moment. Yeah. If I'm seeing a group of people sitting around a table playing a game and that happens, I can see somebody
at the table
laughing.
Oh, yeah.
I can totally see that as a game. Okay, we're all we're talking about characters now. We seem to have left out the most important character in the movie. The monkey staff. One of the elders of the village has this ridiculous mage staff. It's like 6 foot long, and at the top of it is this silver monkey head.
Big, too.
It's a huge monkey head.
The size of a softball.
First time you see it, you're like, whoa, that's a monkey head with this closed mouth. And then he walks in, and these people are sleeping. He slams on the ground, and the mouth opens, and it makes a noise.
And then later, they get attacked by this, like, magma elemental. And the monkey opens its mouth and starts spraying water everywhere.
They never mention the monkey staff. No one acknowledges it exists. No one.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, no one looks at it like, that's one crazy staff. It's just accepted.
Complete background.
Yeah.
It's like you hear those urban legends or whatever about where they film a movie. And they go back and watch, and there's like a ghost in the background that was not there when they filmed it. Like, what was the famous one? Was it Three Men and a Little Baby or what?
Oh, yeah.
And
although that one was debunked.
It was like, well, I know, that's what I said, urban legends. But this is what it reminded me of. Like, when they filmed this movie, there was no monkey staff.
I have never laughed longer or louder at a movie. I thought I was going to have problems breathing.
It was great.
I think both of us were.
Yeah,
at one point. I wasn't sure if I was going to make it.
Every time the monkey staff did something, we had to rewind it and play
and
it
watch
again.
It again.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, these moments of camp.
Sorry.
We're going to lose Adam here in a second.
The monkey staff is going to be right up there with his winged boot. But this is kind of what I'm talking about, where this movie had these moments of camp where it's like, it was a pretty solid movie. And it's like, what were you thinking with this one scene? Anything else on the second movie before we move on to the bigger topic of RPG movies?
Well, I think that was a weakness in writing. Mm-hmm. They did use the monkey staff as deus ex machina.
Yeah.
When they had something they just needed to happen, the monkey staff saved
the
them.
The monkey staff could do it.
And later on, it was the orb.
Yeah, the orb could do anything.
Well, actually, it was funny. Did you notice the orb only came into the plot after they had killed the guy that carried the monkey staff?
Yes, yeah. I did notice.
That's right.
That.
Yeah.
Once the monkey staff was gone, the orb took over. It became the new monkey staff.
And then
it was like it was in scenes when you didn't expect it. Like they'd sit in there talking, and they'd make no mention of it. But there, right behind the guy, was the monkey staff up against the wall.
Scenes where it'd be half of like really thin rod that the head is on. Almost the entire rod will be off the shot, but you just see half of the silver head looking at you.
I wonder who has that monkey staff.
We should. That
would be.
We need that movie prop.
The quest for the monkey staff.
I am going to start searching online, see if I can find out what happened to that movie prop, because we need this.
We're going to make a documentary of that.
That's right.
Just like we need a plug from Bill Cosby. We need that monkey staff.
Do not even start. I can't talk about this movie anymore.
The other thing that I'll go ahead and throw out is the plot was, there was a plot.
Yeah.
And you could follow
unlike
it.
Unlike the first movie where there was nothing.
It did need a little bit of exposition and they crammed a few things down your throat.
Yeah.
But there was a plot that you could follow and it did kind of work out through most of the movie.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, because they had characters and they killed characters, and it was cool. Of course, at the end, all the characters came back to life for absolutely no reason.
Well, except one of them. One of them did stay dead.
Yeah.
Which one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of them did stay dead. And he was
well, this
ugly
still beats
anyway,
the ending of the first movie. The first movie ends.
Wow.
They're all gathered around a gravesite.
Oh,
and then for no particular
man.
Reason, they all turn into fireworks and fly up into the sky.
It was a Disney moment, if
and
ever
mind
there
you,
was
there
one.
Is no context to this. Yeah. It's not like they were all working to transcend to become beams of light.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like sitting there on this gravesite. This gem starts glowing, and they all turn into fireworks and fly away.
Yeah.
I think what really seals the whole experience for me is we watched it with Carlin. Carlin doesn't know really anything about Dungeons & Dragons, and she's asking us to explain things that are happening.
We can't.
Carlin, you're not missing anything by not having Dungeons & Dragons knowledge.
Right. This is not in the DMG or Player's Handbook. This is in the toilet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Floating there.
You are on the same level we are with these movies.
To throw out another difference, though, that brings up between the two movies, the second movie had a lot more references to the role-playing game.
Yes.
Yes, it did.
The Gem of True Scene. There was, what was that? There was a reference to actually do an adventure module in there?
There were several references that they kept on saying because the main character was this washed-up hero who had these adventures in the past.
And they were naming adventure modules.
And they would say, well, what do we do here? Oh, remember when we went to such and such a place?
Tower of something?
Yeah. Which was the name of a module back in the 80s.
Right.
And they did that several times through the whole thing. I didn't catch all of them because I'm not really into the modules.
Yeah, and the characters also conform much more cleanly to the archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
The spells were generally pretty recognizable as being coming
except
from the
except for the Dodge Ram
yeah,
stuff.
Except for the one where she would attack people with a Dodge Ram emblem. We're not sure.
That was product placement.
Yeah, definitely product placement. But Yeah, it was definitely more of a
The D&D one thing move. That surprised me, though, with D&D, I mean, I haven't gamed in probably 15 years.
Leave.
Yeah, I know.
You're on the wrong show, buddy.
I'm getting kicked off the board. I'm out of the guild. D&D has a deep, there's deep histories.
Yeah.
And there are worlds that have been built. I didn't get the sense that there was a broader world in either
right.
movie.
You know,
really wasn't a sense of having a fully formed universe. It was this land, and everything that was happening yeah. was only affected by this land.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. I have seen pen and paper DMs running one campaign put more effort into the backstory and setting than what was done there, and what I'm assuming was a multi-million dollar budgeted movie.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, you know, and this kind of draws into the topic where I really want to go with this, which is the nature of RPG movies in general. It really strikes me as odd that someone would be handed a D&D movie and not put much more work into it than that.
Well,
and either one of two things happened. Either the writers did put it in there and it just didn't come out in the movie, or they didn't put it in there. But either one, what that says to me is the people that ultimately had creative control over producing these movies were apparently not the same kind of fans
right.
of role-playing games that most people listening to the show probably are.
Well, and another thing to add to that is looking at the two movies, one of them was made by a major motion picture studio. Mm-hmm. The first one was made by a major motion picture
right,
studio.
New line.
The second one was not.
Right.
You have a huge difference in creative control with that. Even if you have producers, directors, you still have a studio mm-hmm. that has a say in who you're going to hire, scripts, actors, budget, right. locations, the look of certain scenes, the special effects. They could say, we're going to give you $3 million more dollars for this movie. You have it only for your special effects budget, yeah. for well, nothing else.
Here's something I don't understand, too, is that there are multiple campaign settings that are in D&D that are very rich, very deep, full of stories, full of characters and histories. If you go to Barnes & Noble and you go to the fantasy section, D&D has bays and bays and bays filled with D&D books that course over 20, 30 years.
Right.
Maybe 1% of them are actually good. So why don't you take
Chad at feartheboot.com.
Whoa.
Chad said, okay, Chad said this is not the opinion of the podcast as a whole.
Obviously, you've never read any of these books. They are stinky.
Well, exactly. I've never read them. That's why it's not my opinion. What happens, though, is then I have to field the hate mail for your
insurance. So anyway, these awful, awful D&D books. You know, there are some in there that are actually pretty decent, pretty good. And they have established stories and stuff that you can turn those into movies. And the thing is, these have fan followings. These books are on New York Times bestseller list, whatever that means. But it has, like,
selling millions of copies.
Yeah. So that means there are millions of people who will buy tickets.
Right.
Well,
maybe.
Let's follow this for a second, though, because we're talking about this. Well, these are really only the two RPG movies. This and Mazes and Monsters are the only RPG movies we can come up with off the top of our heads. I'm sure there's maybe some obscure ones out there.
Yeah,
not
some indie, something that actually made it to a silver screen or a release that you could actually get a hold of.
Right.
Not your cousin
and Vinny. Without getting into computer-based or console right. games that are RPG games. I mean, yeah, there are some that are RPGs
yeah,
also.
We're talking the pen and paper stuff. BattleTech, Dungeons & Dragons, Traveller. We're talking, you know, the ones that had fairly developed settings you could theoretically turn into a movie. And these are really the only two I can come up with. And I wonder why that is. Because if you look at the demographic of role players tend to be people that are strong fans of what they're into. I mean, we can see that with that show. And actually, the mm-hmm. comment I just made about Chad makes a negative comment, I get the hate mail. The point behind that, if nothing else, is the fact that people that are into this tend to take it, I don't want to say super seriously, depending on the person, maybe they do, but they do tend to be very strong fans of this sort of stuff. Most role players who have disposable income, they're willing to spend on this kind of entertainment, yet you really don't see that many RPG movies. And I guess to add to that, you also see for some of these role-playing games, you already have these vast settings and characters that have been developed very well
mm-hmm.
and are effectively ready to go. You just yeah. need to put a plot on top of it, and the whole thing is ready to go.
But you know what's going to happen? You're going to get somebody like Ewan Bull directing your favorite role-playing game. So, yeah.
Well, and that ties into a second point of those that are out there.
He's doing that. Well, sort of.
What's his next movie?
Dungeon Siege.
Oh, yeah.
That's a game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I just got done doing Postal, which is...
Ooh, slash cry.
Yeah.
What were we going?
All right, let's talk about that one for a second. Why is it that the ones that are out there aren't very good? I'm going to start with an object lesson here from another medium. I remember comic book movies, mm-hmm. superhero movies.
Yep.
I remember growing up through the 80s that most of the comic book movies in the 80s really weren't all that good. And
hey, I like Tank Girl.
Looking back...
Wow. Part of me just died.
Looking back into like the 70s and 60s and such, they were even worse. And I really don't, in my opinion, think we got really good comic book movies until the past couple of years.
Right.
With the X-Men movie, Spider-Man, Batman Begins, the new Superman movie. And it struck me that part of the problem, and this is once again armchair quarterbacking, but it struck me that part of the problem was that, number one, the people that were writing these movies and directing them and producing them did not understand the subject matter they were going after.
Absolutely.
And they may have known all the facts.
You're saying that the people who made Kung Fu Spider-Man didn't understand Spider-Man?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at, for example, Verhoeven, another guy. Who did the two Batman movies that's really, really, really...
Burton.
No.
Schumacher.
I always get Verhoeven and Schumacher mixed up for some reason. But when Joel Schumacher did those two films, you have Batman, who in his recent iterations, mostly post-Frank Miller, is this brooding, complex, nuanced character. And yet you have the Caped Crusader just cavorting around in a homoerotic outfit. Mm-hmm. And
with anatomically correct nipples.
Consider the director.
Yeah. And, you know, even if this guy knew, if you could put him down and give him a fill-in-the-bubbles test on Batman and he got 100%, this is a guy that still did not understand what Batman was all about. Similar to they don't know it, they don't seem to respect it. And I have to wonder if the same thing is true of the... I realize we have a survey sample here of two, but of the two RPG movies we have, is it the same thing that these people either just do not understand what they're writing or do not respect what they're writing?
I think in the second movie they did understand. The first movie was just bad.
And I think the problem is not understanding and respecting the audience.
Right.
I mean, it's not even the material. It's the audience. Until you had people who were in the comic book industry working in Hollywood, you didn't get good comic book movies.
Yeah.
For anybody who's followed comic books in the last 15 years, there are a lot of major comic book artists that peak and then disappear. Right. They're just gone. Mm-hmm. And they're gone because they're going to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And they're working as storyboard artists or set designers because they can make exponentially more money working on one film than they can slogging away 240 hours to make a 22-page comic book that earns them, you know, a couple of grand.
Yeah.
Because it's a really low-paying field. Yeah.
It's a labor of love. I mean, because you can take the reverse of that argument. You have somebody like Kevin Smith, really successful director who came up from nothing, millionaire, and what did he do with it? He's doing comic books because he loves comic books. You think he's getting paid millions of dollars for his comic books? I don't think so, but he just loves them.
You know, I want to tie this in a little bit too. I was listening to the radio this past week or two, and they were interviewing someone who's a big movie reviewer for one of the local channels here, and he was talking about Charlotte's Web. He apparently just went and saw some pre-release.
I loved that book as a kid.
All right, he just went and saw some pre-release copy of the movie they're about to release. I guess it's next month.
Yeah. Looks like trash.
Well, here's the thing. They said it's actually pretty good, but they talked about...
It isn't.
They talked... You haven't seen it.
It doesn't matter.
Julia Roberts is in it.
Yeah. But anyways, they talked about how the guy that was doing this movie went through all these battles with the studio over the fact that the studio wanted to, quote-unquote, and I hate this crap, update the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That because now it's in the year 2006, we can't have the classic novel on film. Instead, we've got to add in fart jokes and funny new characters and political themes and this, that, and the other.
What if Charlotte was a robot?
Yeah.
Robot Death Spider.
What if Charlotte... bit the little girl and she became Spider Girl.
One of my personal favorites is a novel, is War of the Worlds. Mm. And I have been absolutely heartbroken that to date, there has never been a movie set in the 1890s in England with three-legged walking machines that don't have shields, that use heat rays.
There is one. Good luck finding it, but there is one.
Really? Mm-hmm. I did not know there was one.
You know, I have the same thing going on with a different book to movie translation, and it's not that they mistranslate it, it's just that they updated it unnecessarily, and everybody always rails against me when I say that. I absolutely hate James Bond movies. I despise them because the books are wonderful, and the books rely on character development, plot, story, and no gadgets, because Bond doesn't need gadgets. Whereas the movie, it's all about the special effects and the gadgets and getting the girl and doing this, and it's just, hate that.
There would have never been a series of movies without them. That's a basis in economics.
Yeah.
And the difference is storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, here's my point though. Cause I don't walk too far down this road. When you take a great novel, War of the Worlds, Charlotte's Web, or you take a great comic book, the Frank Miller Batman, whatever you want to talk about. Okay. And if you disagree with me on those, pick something
new.
Yeah. Pick something in your mind that's great. Here you have something that's successful, that has been a great classic, has sold thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of copies, is loved by all. There are countless competing products that are different, that are more modern or more whatever, who are not succeeding. So you take this great thing, and what do? Let's change it all around.
To make it modern.
To make it
stuff that isn't succeeding.
Yeah, which
is quote-unquote better.
Yeah, to make it better. It baffles me. I do not get why people do this. Why they take something that is already great, already excellent, is already some of the best creative material the human race has produced in the past century, and then you feel the need to sit down and rearrange it as if you can outdo H.G. Wells, or you can outdo Frank Miller, or you can outdo whoever, and it always ends up sucking. You look at the
always.
Well, typically. I'll give you that. I agree with you. I'm painting with a broad brush here. Let's take the Spider-Man movies, or let's take the Batman movies.
No, let's take the Spider-Man movies, because the Spider-Man movies is an example of something that has updated and changed, but did it successfully.
Well, but I agree.
He changed some things in it. For example, he gave him the organic thing instead of the web shooters and such.
He updated the octopus to be more hip and modern.
But he was still faithful to the ultimate heart of the story.
Right.
Absolutely. And that's important.
Yeah.
And that's what's most important.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, the little technical details I don't care about. You can look at Batman Begins, which I think was one of the better Batman movies out there. Mm-hmm. The only one I'd put up there with it would be the animated Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah.
And if you look at those, were they super ultra faithful to the recent Batman lore, the current envisioning of Batman? No.
Not at all.
They changed some of the little technical details.
They made Batman a ninja.
But they stayed faithful to the heart and soul of the story.
I accept Batman as a ninja.
Yeah. Another one they did that with is Men in Black. Men in Black, the comic book, which originally was generally accepted, and I don't know because I've never read it, but this is what I understand. It's generally accepted that it's not a very good comic book. The first movie, at least, was very good and very successful because they changed a lot of the crappy factor from the comic.
Forrest Gump
was an
absolutely god-awful book. It was a horrible book.
I've not read the book. I've heard that the book is actually pretty racist.
Racist, sexist. The character of Forrest Gump swears like a sailor through most of it. Mm. He is innocent in that he still plays the same kind of character, but he's an ignorant, I mean, just flat out ignorant hick in most of it. I mean, it's just a horrible book.
Yeah.
But the movie is, I think it's a fine piece of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great movie. Wonderful movie.
RPG movies that should be, but haven't been.
Ooh.
There were actually many years ago.
Oh, BattleTech.
And many years ago, back when BattleTech was at its height, back when like the MechWarrior 2 had just come out and all that stuff, they started negotiations on a BattleTech movie. And as best as I recall, it was supposed to be a character-driven movie, which I think is wonderful because BattleTech.
Mm-hmm. And that's what killed it.
Yeah.
Probably, but in my mind, BattleTech is not about the mechs. It's about the people. It's about the setting. It's about the universe. And it was going to be, I believe, about a guy from the Northwind Highlanders or something like that who was coming back from the Clan Wars and just kind of about his readjustment into life, I think. Mm-hmm. once again, this is...
It's vague.
Yeah, you're talking...
Here, you know, it was, so-and-so said, so-and-so said, so-and-so.
Well, it's preliminary conversation, and you're talking also on top of this, like 10 or 12 years ago.
Right.
So I'm just not remembering it that well. What are some other movies you think would have made, or RPGs, rather, that we wish would be transposed into a movie?
All flesh must be eaten. Whoa. My life for a zombie movie that is not a horror movie. I want a zombie survival movie.
But that's sort of its own genre, because All Flesh, while being a really great game, is the D&D of zombie games. It is the generic zombie thing. And that's the great thing about the game, is that it gives you a rule system to do the combat and do all that other stuff. But then it gives you lists of concepts by which you can run different genres of zombie games.
Yeah,
I don't think that you can really make a movie out of All Flesh, because I think All Flesh was made out of movies. All these different movie concepts and book concepts.
I think inherently you're going to have a hard time making an RPG movie unless you can make it at an independent level, meaning no special effects.
Right.
Which, considering most of the genres of RPG gaming, without special effects, you're going to lose a lot of elements. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you make a BattleTech movie, what's going to happen is you're going to have a studio exec seeing big freaking robots.
Right.
And big freaking robots means toys that we can sell. Mm-hmm. And toys that mean we can sell means more big freaking robots. Yeah. So more robots, more toys, more merchandise, more t-shirts, more video games. It spirals downward from there. And you're going to, the core fans are going to just absolutely hate anything that comes out at that point.
I would like to, it's hard to say, I want to see this role-playing game made into a movie, simply because a lot of role-playing games out there are already based on TV shows or movies or books.
Right.
A lot of the other role-playing games out there are generic concepts. D&D is a generic concept. All Flesh, I consider it to be a generic concept. And I was even thinking, Twilight 2000, that'd be a great one. Twilight 2000 is a generic post-nuke concept. Maybe, it does have specifics in it. But it's very difficult to find role-playing games that are completely 100% original and not a generic concept, but they're out there. I mean, obvious ones. Shadowrun is one. Rifts is one.
Even the tons of D&D settings.
Yeah, I'm trying to differentiate settings from standalone systems. Because, you could say, I'd love to see a Ravenloft game. Or movie. I'd love to see a Forgotten Realms movie. Yeah, I'd love to see a Dragonlance. And the list can go on and on and on and on. But off the top of my head, there's a lot of little indie ones that might be interesting.
It strikes me, though, you talk about, you see big robots, you want to sell products. It strikes me that if the studio execs understood the properties that they were working with and what the fans wanted, you could get both things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take, for example, the current Transformers movie that's coming out. Let's say they had, from what I understand, they're not being terribly faithful to the original 1980s cartoon. But let's say they were. Well, you can release it giving the fans like me, the 20-somethings who watched this in the 80s growing up, exactly what we want, which is a faithful story. Yet you can still then come out with high-quality toys and models and paraphernalia that conforms to that. You know, I think back to BattleTech. I happily would have bought BattleTech toys if it wasn't for the fact they were these god-awful, bright orange, just cartoonish crap.
Well, all the toys were based on that awful cartoon.
Well, exactly. And I see the same thing, that you could do a BattleTech movie and still have tons of opportunities for toys and merchandise and Burger King meals and all these other things without selling out the quality and the depth that is already there in the universe.
But they're not going to make it for quality and depth. They're going to make it for least common denominator.
And
it's a product.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't begrudge them.
No,
that.
No.
You know, they're in those. It's like movies are made by different layers of people.
Well,
the inner layers are like the actors, the directors who are trying to create this art. The outer layers are the money men who finance it and are trying to turn a profit from it. And all of the layers and all the layers in between are necessary.
Well, I begrudge it. I hold this against them for one simple reason. If you are going to set into this, and let's take War of the Worlds, and your interest is not in creating a faithful rendition of War of the Worlds, your interest is in making a big space movie with stomping machines that you can sell tons of toys and make a Happy Meal out of, come up with a different plot.
Right.
Don't claim to me this is War of the Worlds. And I know, I'm sure they do it for name recognition and such.
Yeah.
But I can look at a movie like Lord of the Rings. And sure, they changed some things. But overall, they were extremely faithful to Lord of the Rings. And mm-hmm. look at the financial windfall they reaped for it.
And I mean, toys, games, all the marketing.
They re-released all the novels. And they knocked down hundreds of millions of bucks per movie. I mean, just tons of money. They're still making money on mm-hmm. them. And yet they did it being faithful. And, you know, Tony, going back to a point you made earlier, I've got to wonder if maybe the salvation for the future of RPG movies, however big or little that may be, is in the same thing that comic books did, which is maybe you need to get more RPG writers and gamers in general up into the movie industry so you have people that are sympathetic to what these properties are really all about.
And that, and I think you need to work within what you have right now and make that work. You've got a lot of video game movies coming out that just suck rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
that
just
bad. That is one man's fault.
They're bad.
Uwe Boll.
It's mostly his fault. There are a few other people at fault, but they're just bad movies.
Yeah.
They're not faithful to the games. They're not faithful to decent movie making. They're just poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you had somebody make decent movies from some of this stuff, something that's mainstream, marketable, and then flip it around and start expanding that base, you might start seeing RPG games. The other thing is making RPG storytelling mainstream. And there's not as much of a market. It's right now, it's the fantasy market. It's the horror market. Mm-hmm. And it's tucked away in its own little separate section. Yes, when you go to Barnes & Noble Borders, you see just tons of D&D books. They're sectioned off in their own little mm-hmm. section. They are not interspersed amongst the rest of the fantasy novels.
Right.
And once again,
they're second-class citizens.
I really hope that in terms of movie making, comic books have forged the way here. The comic books went through such a long period where the movies were poor, the products were not understood, yet they started making good, faithful renditions, and they are reaping financial rewards for doing that. I hope they see this as a template that, you know what, gee,
but
maybe if we listen to the fans of video games, the fans of role-playing games, and take them seriously, they will reward us financially as well.
The thing is that they've also had some serious missteps with comic book movies. I mean, I know that
they jump ahead. Jump ahead of it.
I know you're a fan, or you liked Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
Most people didn't.
No, the Hulk. Oh. The Incredible Hulk's the one. Next one coming.
Oh, okay. And then X-Men.
Yeah. 3,
X-Men 3.
Oh,
bad movie.
Ouch.
The
Catwoman bad.
Catwoman bad. Daredevil bad.
I like Daredevil.
I haven't seen it, but I'm talking movies that flop.
Yeah.
Say
financially, it wasn't as viable. It did make money for the studio. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the simple fact of it was it was not as big of a special effects budget movie.
Right.
They released it a different time of year on purpose to avoid the big summer rush. It made money. By the time the DVD came out, it was making money.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just simple economics. It's earning money.
Every Fantastic DVD Four, on the other hand, horrible flop with a huge special effects budget.
Yeah, and I realize that's true, but the point is that within all of those, you have so many real gems.
Mm-hmm.
I can accept some movies. Let's take video games. Some movies will be good, some movies will be bad. Off the top of my head, I cannot come up with a single good video game movie. They have all sucked. I haven't seen it. I've seen the second one. I saw the second one.
The second one was god awful.
Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers, the movie was wonderful.
It was actually a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
It was like a fan's movie.
It was all fan service, ridiculous, and the
first video game movie I recall seeing that, and this one was the beginning of the heartbreak, was Wing Commander.
Yeah,
I love the Wing Commander story
so much better,
and it was horrible. Final Fantasy was another one. This was in Final Fantasy, it was the height of its storytelling. I was aghast at what I saw. I love the powered armor.
It had some wild factor.
See, what just blew it out of the water for me was the only Final Fantasy game I've ever played is Final Fantasy.
The old
Nintendo.
This may have been a step up in storytelling from that.
Just slightly.
I remember that game. I mean,
I just recently played it.
Great side-scroller.
When you first play the first Final Fantasy, when it first came out, which is what I did, I borrowed it from a friend, and I was just thinking it's a Nintendo cart. Blown away. Because to me, it was the first real role-playing game. It was tons better than Dragon Warrior.
Yeah.
And
I love Dragon Warrior.
I know, like,
not only do I love Dragon Warrior, I have a metal slime tattooed on my arm.
Horrible tattooing mistake there, but that's beside the point. But, like, and I know there's a lot of Dragon Warrior fans out there, and I don't mean to rain on anyone's childhood in that, but...
Whoa. This is a first.
Oh, my God. One of the icons from my childhood?
He's pissed off the Shadowrun fans, this fans, that fans. Dragon Warrior fans? I mean, you guys.
He's playing nice for the guest.
That's right.
Well, this is right up there with Schindler's List. He's showing his power through mercy.
Yeah, this is exactly, he just doesn't want Fanboy Smackdown to get a whole bunch of hate mail because he hates Dragon Warrior.
Wow. That's going to happen.
All right.
To me, it just, you know, Final Fantasy set the pace for role-playing games.
It did.
And the standard, so to speak.
And
I don't even remember what the original point with Final Fantasy was.
We're talking about the Final Fantasy movie. We were hoping that comic books will eventually blaze the way for better video game movies, which will in turn blaze the way for better RPGs.
Yeah, Silent Hill. I don't like the Silent Hill games, and thank God Melina doesn't listen to this podcast, because I told her up and down that I hated the movie. But you know what? It was a good movie.
was that a bowl movie?
I believe it was.
I don't know. He did House.
Have to look that.
But see, even the comic book movies went
House
through.
House on Haunted Hill that House, didn't have a hill or a house.
You mean, I thought it was House of the Dead.
Or House of the Dead. Yeah, that's it. House of the Dead didn't have a house.
But even the comic book movies went through a serious drought of just really, really bad movies.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America, Nick Fury,
Japanese Spider-Man.
The Hoff as Nick Fury. The Punisher.
The first Punisher.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, sir. That's
I guess, you know, move on. If you look at the time scale, putting as one book in Bat Shark Repellent and putting at the other book in your first really good recent superhero
Batman's
movies, like maybe
a ninja.
Like we got about 25 years before we should get our RPG movie.
So we got a while.
But
all
it's
right.
in our lifetime.
Well, folks, mark your calendars. Start counting down 25 years. In 2031, we expect a fantastic movie. Yep. And if we've broken into Hollywood, it'll be a Battletech movie.
That's right.
Thanks you all for tuning in. Be sure to check out Fanboy Smackdown at fanboysmackdown.com. And for the rest of you guys, we will catch you at feartheboot.com this coming weekend to kick off our game design series. So we will catch you then.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.